Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in sciences while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Hello everyone, welcome to the new episode of Pharmaspoo Life Sciences and Science Life. Today I'm here with Katarzyna Jadzinska, a PhD student from the Department of Journalism, Book Studies and Information at the University of Warsaw, and Jana Milchova, a PhD student from the Department of Pharmacology at the Charles University. Hello, welcome to our podcast.
Hi. Hi, Harry. Thank you for the invitation.
Together with Jana and Katarzyna, we were at the workshop, The Importance of Pharmacology Education in the Age of Misinformation and Disinformation. The workshop is in two different phases. The first phase was held in University of Warsaw in the month of November. Today we are conducting the second phase of our workshop, where we are discussing some of the important topics related to antibiotic resistance and usage of nicotine pouches, and then how to identify fake news or how to verify some news from the Warsaw Journalist Department. So let we go into the topic. What is the difference between misinformation and disinformation in medicine?
Well, in my view, I would summarize it into one word. It is intention. Disinformation is spread intentionally, while misinformation is just a mistake. We understand it in a wrong way.
I agree with that statement. I think misinformation not always is made by purpose, and some bad might want good for other people, but they put the information that is not reliable. And disinformation is made with purpose, and somebody wants to achieve something using this information, using posting this information.
Cool. And you are from a journalist perspective. So when it comes to misinformation and disinformation, what do you think? What are the steps we can take to identify or clarify which is misinformation and disinformation? How you distinguish this?
It's really hard nowadays to tell what is misinformation and what is disinformation. It's sometimes combined together. What can we do to avoid it? We can check the sources, we can check the author, we can check if there are some references to scientific proven literature or scientific articles, and what does the webpage that we are looking for the information looks like. We could make usage of these easy things and find out which information is good and bad.
Okay. What do you think, Jana?
It's a real challenging to distinguish in between, because we never know whether the who spread it do it intentionally or not. That's why it is important to verify every information. And in general, you do not need to be expert in the field, but you need critical thinking and verify the sources.
So when it comes to the pharmaceutical, as we are talking about pharmacology, what do you think, Jana, that this specific particular information that vulnerable to false information? Is there any specific drug or any specific topic you want to clarify that leads to misinformation?
In my view, vaccination is something that is really very difficult topic when you want to explain it properly to those who do not want to be vaccinated. That's, they spread this information intentionally, I would say very often. Nevertheless, there are more other topics that are related to the pharmaceutical products, such as antibiotics, for example, such as some natural products and supplements, and people share this information via social media platforms, and then other explain their just opinion, not verified opinion or expert status. And that is maybe the topic that is more vulnerable to be misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. Katarzyna, like when we are talking about this, you know that the pharmaceutical drugs are specific topic on this. The internet or the journalist way that changed how people access the information regarding this perspective. So as a journalist, what do you think that how the internet changed to the misinformation because of easy access for the people nowadays?
I think the most change with disinformation and misinformation was when the AI started to be so common. When you type anything in Google, the first thing that you see is from AI, from ChatGPT. And it's sometimes it's good information, but most often it's something that is wrong, that's not scientifically proven, and people don't think about it. They think that that it's good information, that's easily accessible, and then they don't go farther. They don't search another sources about this topic. They just trust the ChatGPT. It's easy, quick, and simple.
And maybe I would add that the distrust in institutions is also a very strong factor that may lead to using and easily access internet information.
Mm-hmm. Adding to your point, Yana, like as you mentioned that that the institutions, like the disagreements on the institutions, what do you think that need to be changed in the level to get attention from the people related to institutional level?
That's not an easy question. And I have to say that trust is a cornerstone when it comes to medical care in general. So when we believe that we have a good regulatory authorities, then we believe that we have good medical care and we trust in pharmacotherapy, etc. And in my view, the first step is a good education. And when we have good education, and this is the name of our workshop, good education, more information means less misinformation, and it builds the trust as well.
And when we talk about the good education to avoid the misinformation, let we take some example on here that regarding most common myths among the people that we can clarify the or how we can approach this as misinformation or disinformation. So as mostly you know that in the winters people used to take vitamin D supplements as a common thing, but as a medical professional we are aware that vitamin D supplementations were not consumed by everyone, but the people needs to be checked by themselves on the levels of vitamin D, and then if they are deficient of vitamin D, then only they can go for the vitamin D supplements. Any other examples be as a misinformation that can be clarified?
Vitamin D is a good example, and I would like to point out to one more misinformation regarding the antibiotics. And in my view, this is the point which is connected with the education at even at the grammar school. And the misinformation is if I take antibiotics only occasionally or almost never, they will always work effectively for me, and antibiotic resistance only affects people who use antibiotics often. And what is the reason why some people think it? Because they do not know difference between bacteria and virus, for example. And this is something we have to emphasize even for kids and teenagers again, because then they are able to think critically about such misinformation.
That we are in the face of evolving AI. Here the question pop up for me is that, do you think that can AI be used to combat the medical misinformation?
In my view, AI should support experts, but not replace it, not replace them, which means that let's use it, but think critically, and we should be able to understand the fundamentals of the topic, and then we are able to evaluate better the information we receive from AI. But yeah, it's a good tool, as we say, good servant, but we have to evaluate properly how to work with this information.
There's a role for the experts to feed the AI, for example, ChatGPT and Gemini and other sources with good information, scientifically proven and verified by them.
Do you think the healthcare system is prepared to respond to misinformation crisis?
I don't think so at this time. We have to put some effort into changing something, and it's not easy. And what I feel that it's a drawback of it, that the system is very slow for any changes, and if we want to implement it, we have to also accept that it won't be within days or weeks. It will take some time.
During COVID pandemic in Poland, we failed with it. People don't trust doctors anymore. There were a lot of misinformation to the vaccines, to ways how do we contaminate with COVID-19. And after that pandemic season, more people are not trusting the health doctors, the health companies. It's getting worse, and we had a chance to make people trust these companies, and we missed it.
And I would also add that healthcare system is not designed to compete with viral information or some show that we can observe. So we have to also accept that spreading of misinformation still will exist, and people will share it. And we have to put some effort into explaining what is the problem, why this information is misleading, etc.
What are the strategies or some tips to the people who can think before sharing the information or repost the information? Is there any strategies that we can provide before sharing or something like this? Can you please tell me some of?
There are, but I would recommend, if you are not sure that this is a verified information, do not share it. And this is a rule that everyone of us should accept.
Yes, I totally agree. There are many rules in journalism that are connected with ethics of information, but they might be too complicated for normal people who aren't scientists. I can tell them to check in other sources, check the author, or check the general look of the website. Is it some kind of clickbait full of advertisements? Are there? And there is also this case that we can look for the funding of the site. Who made it? For whom? To have a look at this information on this site. That's all.
And I would add one more point to this. Our task as experts is to improve and promote health literacy. And that's the key from the beginning. And we are here from medical faculties, pharmacists, journalists, and other specialists. And we can be a little bit more proactive, every one of us, to promote and improve the literacy in general.
Is there any country or government that put a new schemes or something that they are doing better than other people? Do you have some example for this?
I think in Poland, we have a good plan with our health education program in schools, but this health education isn't mandatory. So only one-third of the pupils are going to these classes because of religious concerns. That there are some things in curriculum of this subject connected to sexual education concerning such cases as LGBT, and the church in Poland had a huge impact on parents that won't allow their children to go to this subject because of these concerns. So the plan is here, but it's not working.
So do we have any?
I would like to say that it is the Czech Republic. Nevertheless, it's still in a process. But I think that we are on a good way. The example, for example, is that our project was supported so we can have this conference, these workshops, and discuss the topic. But maybe it was 2 years ago, I was in Lisbon, Portugal, and I was there at the pharmaceutical faculty, and they have some web page that is available for the public, and there are only really relevant, valid information that are presented in a very simple way. And I think that for people, it is something that can be used when they are not 100% sure about the validity of information.
Thank you for joining to talk about this important topic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts Ranjit and
Hari.
Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and expert contributions on how to navigate a career path of a young scientist.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sports Sciences. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. See you next time. This was the last episode of the season. Thanks for joining us.